101.3.fm on your dial. I am Missy J.
Imagine a disease that affects more than 10 million Americans. More than AIDS, Parkinson's, ALS, MS, and muscular dystrophy combined. Yet few know its name. Some years ago, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And after surgery, she developed lymphedema, LE, a cruel and chronic disease affecting 10 million Americans that occurs when the lymphatic system is compromised, leaving one with a lifetime of severe swelling and pain. What we found out later is its severity might have been lessened or possibly even prevented if only we were better informed. That's why I'm urging anyone facing cancer treatment to get educated, talk to your doctor, make it part of your cancer conversation. And if you have LE, share your story. With patients and doctors working together, we can learn and live. Learn more at lymphaticnetwork.org.
Winner of the Spirit of College Radio Award, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the WHFR Journal. My name is Alan Mazurek with you for this hour of things going on in our community and on the HFC campus, as we do every Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock on the WHFR Journal. Well, as the colors of the leaves change and the leaves start to fall off the trees, we know one thing and one thing only. It is generally election season. This year, of course, is no difference. Midterm elections going on, with candidates being elected for the U.S. House of Representatives, Senate, and of course, State Senate and House of Representatives, as well as local elections. That's what we're going to focus on today, and we're going to get to meet some of the candidates running on this year's ballot for the Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education. Now, as you may have noticed, some of their meetings of the current board have certainly been in the news lately, so this is a particularly interesting election with five candidates who are going to be on the ballot. Three of them were able to participate in this forum, which was held and sponsored and hosted by the League of Women Voters Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, our good friends and partners. And we certainly thank them for allowing us to bring you this candidate forum for the Dearborn School Board on today's WHFR Journal. Now, as it originally happened, this forum ran about an hour and 15 minutes or so. So we will have to do a little bit of editing in order to fit it in our 1 hour time slot here on the WHFR Journal. But in keeping with the League of Women Voters' mission of being nonpartisan, we will do everything we can to ensure equal access to the questions and equal time for all of the candidates represented in this forum, which took place. It was held on October 11th, 2022. We'll dive into it now and introduce our host and moderator for this forum from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. The entire forum is available on their website as well at lwvddh.org. That's League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights.org. Let's listen to it now here on today's WHFR Journal.
Welcome to the League of Women Voters of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights Forum for School Board Candidates. My name is Judy Carty. I'm a resident here at the Village and an active member of the League of Women Voters of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. We are happy to have some of the school board candidates here. We have Ned Apigian, Steve Durant, and Ribwan Salah. Those three. We are sorry to say that two of the candidates weren't called today and said they wouldn't be able to come. So anyway, we're sorry about that, because we always are hoping that everybody comes. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan national organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. The League never supports or opposes candidates or political parties, nor is it responsible for candidates' responses. Membership is open to men and women age 16 and older. All the questions in this forum were suggested by League members and were adapted by the League of Women Voters Dearborn-Dearborn Heights Voter Service Committee. Today's forum will be moderated by Barbara Wallace, a League member and resident here at the Village. I will now turn it over to her.
Okay, the order for this forum will be as follows. Each candidate gets 2 minutes to make an opening statement and 2 minutes at the end to make a closing statement. We thought this was going to be an hour and a half with five candidates, but since we have three now, it will be shorter. And you will have 2 minutes to answer each question on a rotating basis. Okay, for opening statements, why don't we go in alphabetical order? So, Mr. Apigian, 2 minutes.
Good evening. My name is Ned Apigian. I was born in Niagara Falls, New York, where I graduated from the Trott Vocational Technical High School from a 3-year preparatory engineering program. After graduation, I joined the U.S. Marines. After my active duty service, I moved to Dearborn and attended the Henry Ford Community College. After 3 semesters, I transferred to the School of Architecture at the University of Detroit, where I graduated from their 6-year bachelor's program. Then I enrolled in Wayne State University, graduating with a master's degree in urban planning. Later, I subsequently earned 2 associate degrees, one in science and the other in liberal arts, from the Henry Ford Community College. While still a student at the University of Detroit, I was married to my present wife of 58 years, and we were blessed by God with the birth of our one and only child, Heather, a graduate of Dearborn High, class of 83. I am licensed by the state of Michigan to practice in 3 different professional disciplines, architecture, urban planning, and as a residential builder. I am presently a semi-retired, self-employed architect who was twice elected as councilman in the city of Dearborn Heights. My second outside interest is broadcasting. For 5 years, I operated a weekly radio program where I presented events and history to music. For the last 12 years, I have been a volunteer on the Henry Ford College radio station on WHFC 89.3 FM.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Durant.
Good evening, everybody. So my name is Steve Durant. I attended Melvindale High School, class of 1993. I went to the University of Michigan Dearborn to pursue engineering, took a different path, and became an educator. I did not get my certification right away, so I tended to work under emergency certification while I went to Mary Grove College in Detroit, the GRIO program. It was a program designed for African-American males to become administrators in the city of Detroit, and they couldn't, I was one of 53 G2s is what we call ourselves. So I got my master's from there, and I was currently teaching. I was teaching at a charter school, which most people get this wrong. A charter school is a public school funded by public money, and cut my teeth there. And while there, I decided to spread my wings, so to speak, and I've been teaching at Wyandotte Public Schools, Roosevelt High School. This is our 100th year for the building, very similar to Fortson High. Went back to get a pure mathematics degree, master's at Eastern. Didn't work out, but then I eventually went back and got my second master's in technology ed. I have 5 children, 2 of them from my first marriage and the other 3 from my remarriage. I have a grandson in the Dearborn Public Schools who goes to the Nowlin. 4 of my 5 kids came through Dearborn Public Schools. My youngest is in ninth grade, and my middle boy is in 12th grade at Edsel Ford High School. What have I done in the community? If you've ever seen the murals in the city, the pop murals in the East End, me and my family have helped with the youth to paint those. You'll see me at homecoming and paint out in the park. I'm coached all kinds of youth sports in the city. I think my time is almost up.
Thank you, Mr. Durant. Mr. Sella.
Hello, everyone, and good evening. I would like to thank the League of Women Voters and everyone for joining us tonight. My name is Dr. Redwan Saleh, the only professor running for the six-year term. I am a product of Durban. I have attained my associate degree from Henry Ford Community College, and I have my master's degree in electrical engineering and master's degree in project management from the University of Michigan. And I have my PhD in management and sustainability from the University of Malaysia. I am a concerned parent with six children, where five of them are currently in Durban schools. And I am a professor in various universities and colleges in Michigan who deals every day with students, parents, and school administrations. I have more than 17 years of experience, theoretical and practical, which will add a huge value to the Durban Board of Education. My aim is to provide high quality, sustainable education to all students, ensure the safety of our students and staff, listen to the concern of all stakeholders, and carefully manage our school district's finance and taxpayers' money. Thank you very much.
All right, the first question. And we'll do this in a rotating way. So, Mr. Durant, you're going to be first this time. What is your top priority to address in the K-12 program? And what is your top issue to address at HFC? What action would you take to address each?
So I think the biggest priority in K-12, it would be teacher attainment. My wife is actually a teacher in the Dearborn Public Schools. I've had former student teachers of mine work in the Dearborn Public Schools, and now they have left. Lots of people have left the public schools because it seems like they say students first, but then teachers fall somewhere further down the line. My kids are super important. All of our kids in this community are super important, but I believe teacher attainment is probably a big thing. I would love to see our teachers want to bring their families into our city and stake roots here in Dearborn. That's what I did. There's been several times I've tried to become a teacher in Dearborn, but it just hasn't quite worked out that way. But the first one would be, yes, to retain teachers, to make sure it's equitable education for everybody. What I mean by that is the children with 504s and IEPs should feel the same educational experience as everybody. The children at Fortson in the vocational education should get the same exact vocational education as the DHS kids or the Edsel Ford kids. As far as the college, I had one daughter who went there for one semester. I'm not super familiar with some of the things that go on at Henry Ford College, but I do know that my youngest son wants to be a culinary artist, and they have a really, really good program there. And I think that not enough of our community knows how invaluable community college is. I teach personal finance in Wyandotte Public Schools, and one of my biggest things is everybody should start at a community college because you don't know if you're going to like college and you don't know what you have to offer. We have many, many gems in this city, and two of them are the Henry Ford College and the University of Michigan Dearborn. And I think that our community and our kids need to be aware that those services are available for you.
And Mr. Sala, same question. What's your top priorities and what action are you going to take to address each of them?
Well, thank you very much. That's a great question. Actually, as a professor who is teaching in different universities, I believe the first priorities, you know, it's first of all, it's very important to get data to understand what are the priorities that schools are needed, as well as Henry Ford Community College. You know, as well as Henry Ford Community College, there is a lot of needs that they can, they usually need, like infrastructure, maintenance to the buildings, make sure that technology is involved within the buildings, make sure that the teachers and students are, you know, satisfied of what they are doing in schools. At the same time, as a teacher who is teaching in different universities, I know how to deal with students. I know I'm in the shoes of the teachers. So understanding what are required and understanding what is the needs is very important. Maybe having some trainings to train our students and have some sustainable education, which you know, teachers and students can enjoy. And the most important thing is to make sure that the parents are involved with the kids' students, so they can understand what are their kids are learning, and in the same time to break the barriers between the parents and the teachers. This is very important, and this is what we are looking as a parent and as a teacher. If I don't understand what my son is doing in a school, then it will be difficult for me to follow up with him. Everyone aiming for his son or for his students to be in the highest level of education. So in order to have that, we have to make sure that our kids are having high sustainable education and make sure that all kids and staffs are safe in the buildings.
Thank you. And Mr. Apigian.
If I were on the school board, I could sit here and tell you all the various problems there are and then list the priorities in order. I am not on the school board. I do not know what all their issues are. So to list a bunch of statements about we ought to do this for that, we ought to do that, this for that. The question is, what are the problems and which one is more important to me? Can't answer that because I don't have any experience with that. But the question I'm more interested in, the Dearborn system is what's called a platinum system. It's one of the best systems, best funded in the state. If you want to know what actions we should take for either the college, is that we need an organized plan as to what we're going to do and how we're going to react to the major issue that's facing every school in America, and that is the threat of violence against the staff and the students. The question is, what is the plan? Do we have a plan? How good is that plan? And that's the most important issue of all the priorities that face the school. This is a first-class gold standard system. It probably has less problems than most school districts in the state of Michigan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start with Mr. Salah. How do you plan to address staff shortages throughout the district?
Well, thank you very much. First of all, I think in the time being, maybe there is an issue with the staffing, I will say this clearly. But it's a very important, every school have a system to follow and to understand who is qualified through the interview. And the most important thing is to choose the qualified teacher in the right position. This is very important, because if we choose the qualified person or the qualified teacher, which means he is the one able to deliver the message to the students, it's very important. Teaching, it's a very big responsibility, and I'm the shoes of the teacher. So you have to prepare yourself day and night, and you have no weekends. You work every day, most likely. So it's very important that you choose the professor or the teacher who is able to deliver the message and who is able to communicate with the students and who is able to have the students as their friends. Because let me tell you one thing, if the students doesn't like the teacher, then it will be difficult for the students to understand what the teacher is explaining. And I'm telling you this from experience. The most important thing is to break the barrier between you and the teacher, so the students will have the ability to adopt the information needed from their teachers. It's always to have the right staff in the schools, and it's always important to have communication between teachers, students, and parents, and it's always very important to let the administration understand what the teachers are doing. Because if they understand what the teachers are doing, they will understand if they are satisfied to deliver the message to the students or not.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Apegian.
You know, I didn't understand the question.
The question was, where did I put it now? God. Wait a minute. Sorry about that.
The speaker's backlash.
Yeah, the question was, how do you plan to address staff shortages throughout the district?
Well, apparently, the school systems have the same problem that all of society has. There is not enough workers to work all our jobs, and apparently, it affects schools as well as every. How many of us have gone somewhere and said, you know, I don't have staff? Well, there's only two things you can do. You can offer the retired teachers an opportunity to come back and make a deal with them where they can maintain and keep their pensions and whatever benefits they've accrued throughout their years. That is your major source of qualified people. That means it's going to cost more money. But if you're short of staff, you can't have a school without teachers, just like you can't have a school without students. I suppose you can accelerate your requirements in terms of reducing them, but I don't think that's the goal. There are plenty of retired teachers, and I think that's the smartest avenue. You can advertise in other states, primarily the southern states, which don't pay nearly as well. And that's a resource to steal their teachers. But the question is, how qualified are they? And they like the northern educated teachers, but it's a question of money. Always money talks. And I believe the retired teacher is the best solution to that problem.
Thank you. Mr. Durant?
This is a great question. Speaking from my teacher standpoint of 23 years, there's a national teacher shortage. For years and years and years, people have bad-mouthed teachers, said that they can do it better. And I think we got a little taste of that if you have grandchildren or children that did any sort of online learning during the pandemic. I lived that, been there, I've done that. You need to do two things. In the city of Dearborn, we need to, like I said, retain our teachers, make them want to be here. It's not always about pay. It's about being appreciated, being supported, being trusted, building that relationship between the home, between the parents, between the community. As far as I mentioned, our one gem of University of Michigan Dearborn, maybe we should reach out to them and have more outreach. Bring the educators, the School of Education, into our buildings and try to pluck from in our own city. There's not one kid that goes to University of Michigan Dearborn and goes, you know what, I don't think I want to do my student teaching or come into Dearborn. There's tons of room to grow here. As far as reaching out to your untapped resources as retired teachers, the state binds our hands because you can't do a single thing for 9.5 months after you're retired to come back in. Lots of times, the game has changed from my 23 years. What I did 23 years ago, I can't do now. There's a little bit of no one wants to do this job. I have two master's degrees, and I teach at a college. I could easily go crunch numbers with my math degree, then come into the classroom and be unappreciated. The moment somebody does something, a teacher does something wrong, people are out there wanting to not understand their story or know what it's like. I encourage people to come sit in a classroom for 25 minutes and see what happens. So that's what you need to do.
Thank you. Next question. Since book banning is so controversial, not only in Dearborn, but all across the country, what is your position on this topic? How will you ensure that any effort to remove materials from school libraries undergoes a transparent and public process of review? Mr. Apigian, you first.
Well, this is what I have read in the newspapers, which seems to make sense to me. The mayor has pronounced that what should be done is to form a committee. And that seems to make sense, that you form a committee of five people with different backgrounds, whether from school administration, the teachers' union, and you analyze that subject from different points of view and in different places. And that committee would come back to the school board, presumably with a recommendation. The problem is individuals as to what they think. I personally believe that smut material shouldn't be in a school library. But today, you can't keep anything from anybody. You can go on the internet and find anything you want. But me personally, but that doesn't mean I'd vote to do that. You have to look at the culture of the community you're in, the traditions of the community, the laws of the state of Michigan. Everybody thinks you're going to adjudicate everything by how you feel. After that committee looks at all those things and studies it in depth, they come back with a recommendation. You may not personally think that that recommendation suits you, but however, you have to be convinced that that committee has done a thorough job and their recommendation needs to be taken. That's what I think. It's like representative government. Everybody thinks that when they elect somebody, they're to make the decision unilaterally. It doesn't always work that way. You can't be based on the prejudices of each individual. An issue of that is Sharia law. Imagine what people would think about that. That needs to be discussed. Thank you. Learn about it.
Mr. Durant.
I think everybody needs to read, period. I think that banning books is not the best decision to do. I think many of the people that come to the meetings and scream this and scream that need to pick up their child's cell phone and take a look at what they're looking at. Reading a book, whether it's pornography, the Bible, the Quran, it's all to enlighten somebody. You don't understand the viewpoint of somebody else until you read that book. That book can be a window. That book can be a door. But by banning the book, you've banned people's ability to enlighten themselves. Having a committee, who's on this committee? Do we trust the teachers that picked these books? Do we dig in the facts before we start making our own opinions? Did you know that there is a national shortage of librarians in this entire country? You can go to your local schools and say, can I speak with the librarian, please? Dearborn, we might have a few. My district has not had a librarian in 15 years in the high school.
What?
But we have a really good computer lab. And we have wonderful technology and infrastructure. Give a book to a small child, they won't know how to flip the pages. Give an iPad to a small child, they'll find whatever video they want. Notice what I just said, video. There's the mandate of everybody needs to read by third grade. What happens if most of our children can't read by third grade? Do you think that someone's going to fail children in third grade because they all can't read? Where does that start? The books they read at home. So if you're banning books in classrooms, maybe check to see what kind of books are in the home as well.
Mr. Siller.
Well, thank you very much. I think there is a lot of talk about these books nowadays. Well, from my point of view, the school administration already assigned a committee to solve this issue. So at the time, I would like to see the result or output of the review first, because based in my project management experience, you cannot provide solution without assessing the initiative of the committee. So let's wait and see what the committee are coming up with, and based in their results, we can make decision. There, the books which are questioned are taken out of the shelf, and there is a committee appointed by the administrations, and these committee are reviewing the book, so they are in process of reviewing the book. So once we get to the results, we can make the decision, and this is how things works. However, I am always focus on the students' needs and safety, and listen attentively to the concern of parents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question, we'll start with Mr. Durant. Does the district adequately support ancillary workers such as nurses, social workers, counselors, and paraprofessionals? How would you address student health care issues, including mental and social and emotional health?
I think that we can always do better. I think social-emotional learning has been the focus for Dearborn Public School the last year because of the pandemic. The children have been affected emotionally from all this. There's social anxiety, there's lots of anxieties, there's identity issues, and there's, again, going back to this shortage that we've all talked about, it's difficult to find school social workers, school nurses, and the staff that you need to help facilitate these programs. I think it's vital, like when you talk about safety, I think it starts out with, you know, almost like a triage. If you have a social worker, social workers tend to look at the children who need the immediate needs, and then also the children with the 504s and the IEPs. But what about the kids who are just having a bad day? I think there should be at least two social workers in every building. That's a lot. You might have one social worker for five buildings. It's the same thing in the healthcare. But if we could adequately find people who could maybe, again, tap a resource, Beaumont, have some of the social workers, some of those health occupants come and volunteer. Firefighters do it in the ER. Why can't they come and help our schools out to help train the social workers, or to bring them in and help build these programs, like maybe like a reset room where a kid's having a bad day and just isn't feeling it today, maybe got in a fight at home? Go to the reset room, find yourself, go through some training exercises with that social worker that's in the room, maybe breathing or something, and then get back. Most of us didn't have that in high school or in elementary school. It's something that we're not knowledgeable about. But I do believe we need to find creative ways to recruit social work and health staff like that.
Thank you. Mr. Salah?
Could you please repeat the question?
Sure. Does the district adequately support ancillary workers such as nurses, social workers, counselors, and paraprofessionals? How would you address the student health care issues, including mental, social, and emotional health?
Well, thank you. I think and I believe that having the concern of social workers in schools is very important. Those social workers who are working in school, they are for the beneficial of our students. If they are there, then we are, and our students aren't safe. Some accidents happen to the students, then we have someone who can look after them. So it's always recommended to have at least one social worker in each school to make sure that all the process and all the students are safe. And also at the same time, when we have enough staff in the building, then we are safe and the parents will have a peace of mind thinking about their children in school. So I believe they are doing a good job in recruiting staffs like this, and in the same time, it's important to have enough employees at buildings.
Thank you. Mr. Apagian.
Well, I assume the question means in these categories, the necessity of having social workers, counselors, nurses, healthcare workers, there is a deficit in this area, whoever wrote this question. Now, I don't know that that's true. I am not on the school board and don't know if that's the case, but it's probably the case, for sure. I'm sure, as Steve mentioned, there's one social worker for five buildings, not two in one. So it comes back to the same question of having not enough staff. You don't have enough counselors, or a counselor is the football coach and he's a counselor on the side. That's not new if you're a teacher. I think I know that from being a student, not so much as being a teacher. You have to steal staff from other places. Dearborn is the very richest of the communities. You're going to have to offer more and get them from somewhere else, either from within the metropolitan area or advertise in Texas and Tennessee. And when they see what you're willing to pay, they'll come here and we'll solve the problem. Right now, I do not know if we have a lot enough social workers in enough buildings, but I can imagine we could use more. To talk about platitudes of how they're important, I'm sure they're important. But everybody knows a football coach that's doing something else probably has no business doing the other thing as well. We're lucky in this system. We have a very wealthy system. Take advantage of it. Use it.
Thank you.
Next question. What is your position on the history of discrimination and civil rights being taught in the schools? Mr. Sella, you're first.
Can you repeat the question, please?
What is your position on the teaching of the history of discrimination and civil rights in the schools?
Oh. Well, actually, I totally, as everyone is equal, I do not tolerate discrimination or harassment. I strive to force trolling, affirming, and inclusive learning and working environment. I believe the districts strive to prevent and correct any discriminations behavior. So enforcing appropriate policies and regulation will help the prevention of discrimination in Durban Public School. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Apagian.
Right now, the three initials that everybody's politically concerned about is going through my head. I can't think of it. This has to do with the issue of teaching black history. What are those initials?
CRT, Critical Race Theory.
Which is it?
CRT, Critical Race Theory.
Critical Race Theory. There it is. It is ridiculous in an educational environment not to teach history all the history, not some of it, and not to distort it, but to tell the story. It is ridiculous to do anything else. Now, there's a time and place to teach different issues. You present five-year-olds in a different environment, different way. So making the study of the history of the United States in terms of slavery and everything else and civil rights and discrimination and not teach it because you think it has some political invitation is insane. It just does not make any sense, and it's certainly not educational not to teach. You may not like your history, but that doesn't mean you can't educate people by talking about it. Doesn't mean you adopt it. I'm not responsible for slavery. My father wasn't here when it happened, but to not be able to teach it to everybody and learn something from it, make sure the bad things we discover are not repeated, is what you have to do in an educational setting. It just has to be proper for your age and place.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Durant.
My first 4 years of education was in Detroit Public Schools. I grew up listening to Martin Luther King's speech before this state honored Martin Luther King Day. I went to Mary Grove College, and when I mentioned the GRIO program, I said it was for African-American males. It's our history. It's the world's history. Do we teach the apartheid in South Africa? Do we teach about the genocide, what they did to the Armenians? I think history is important so we don't repeat it. And it needs to be taught in public schools, because public schools is where you're supposed to become enlightened. So there shouldn't be an issue of discrimination in whether you teach that history. It happened. As long as it doesn't keep happening, and that we educate our youth on the mistakes that people have made, regardless of skin tone, their religious backgrounds, because all of that is discrimination. So it's not just the United States history, it's the world history. And it happened. And we need to make sure that it stays in our school systems to be taught, to reflect, and to improve.
Thank you.
I'm getting confused.
Okay. You're getting a break.
This question I love. I think it'll be. It's got. You know, you can say what you do what you want with it. What new ideas would you bring to the table for our school district? That's what we want. We want to find out what new ideas you'll bring. Mr. Apigian.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry.
Well, ideas are my business as an architect. My own issue is I'm a graduate of a vocational technical high school in New York. It was absolutely free. They gave you all the paper and everything you needed. And when I graduated, the firms in the city were lined up to hire the graduates. I don't know what they were doing at the local high school. I think they were all planning to go to college. So what I see in our educational system, it needs to be oriented much like the Europeans do, not exempt. They have a system called 11 plus, where they shunt off students. You're going to be a plumber. You're going to be a carpenter. You show promise. You're going to college, and you're going to go free. We need a system, an educational system, that you don't have to wait till you join a union to get in an educational program. It should be done in school. That's the kind of school I went to, and that's the kind of school we need to advocate. I understand in our system, some children go to other schools and learn things like that. We need to go back to the airport. You remember the airplane school used to be in Detroit, the airplane mechanic? Our school system is not geared. Girls get to be secretaries. Boys, it's a chance. Let's see what happens to you. Horace Greeley said, go west, young man. God knows you might become a millionaire, but give you some training, some education, some background, some knowledge, some discovering what you know, what your potential is. That's what we need to do, and we're not doing it.
Thank you. Mr. Durant?
This is a great question. So I have a couple, I would say they're not radical ideas, but I don't know if you guys are aware, but we have the Michael Berry Center / the STEM Middle School / the Dearborn Center for Science and Technology. So the elite fifth graders in the entire district have the opportunity to go to the STEM school. What about the other ones? Why can't we sprinkle the STEM throughout all of our middle schools? Even the ones in the East End, like Lowry, that's almost 100 years old, sprinkle it there. You mentioned vocation. Did you guys know that the wood shop closed down in Etzelford? So I mentioned that earlier in my opening statement. Why not repurpose the Michael Berry Center? We could have a wood shop, an auto shop, welding, all the vocationals that we want, and send all of our children, take out the STEM, sprinkle it around the middle school through the whole district, bring those resources so you can have one teacher service all three high schools. Oh, wait, two of the three high schools are overpopulated. There's been talk of where we're going to build the fourth high school. I don't care where we need to build the fourth high school. We need a fourth high school. I don't care where it's at. We need a fourth high school because classroom sizes cannot be as big as they are for us to offer a quality education to our children. And for us, some people are like, well, it would be $150 million. It might raise our taxes $30 to $50 a year. Our buildings are old. We have Fortin's 100 years old. I believe O.L. Smith is almost pushing 75, 60, 80, something like that. We need to have a broader vision of what we can use with our existing resources and what we're going to do for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Salah.
Well, that's actually a very good question, and this is what I'm doing as a project manager. I worked more than 12 years as a project manager, and I manage complex projects. So the first things to understand or to come up with an idea or to come up with a project is to understand the needs of the society. So once you understand the needs of the society, and then you can come up with an idea that can build up your projects. For example, if we are in need for a fourth school, then we have to check the population, how many around this area in order to build a high school or college and so on. So the first thing is to make the plan and to make the plan clear and to understand all the needs of the stakeholders. And based on this, you can come up with an idea. With regards to school, in order to come to idea, so we have to make sure that we are providing a system with the new technology to schools. This is an idea which maybe some colleges here or high schools need it for that. We need some maintenance to different schools. There are some schools which are old, so we need to come up with an idea how can we have a maintenance to these schools and to repair whatever is old. And we need to come up with an idea to have a good system for the school, whether it is a system that is used in the library or system that is used in the college or high school. We need to come up with an idea that will allow the students to have the graduation maybe in a time where it is time for them to graduate instead of waiting for so long. Now there are different high schools which deals with different colleges where students can take college classes while he's still in high school. So these good ideas need to be adopted with all the schools around Michigan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, a philosophical question. How do you see the principles of democracy being broadly integrated into the curriculum? Mr. Durant, you're first.
I believe teachers are given the freedom to teach the curriculum, but also have an end goal in mind. A big buzz thing for as far as democracy goes is the you might hear an educational buzzword called professional learning community, which basically means if I have a ninth grader taking Algebra 1 at Fortson and they move to Edsel Ford and take Algebra 1, they're getting the same educational experience. So the teachers are the voice. They're the ones who set it up, and everyone kind of agrees. You can disagree a little bit, but everyone plays the same ball game, so to speak, so that it's equitable throughout. Now, is every subject, every grade, everybody in the whole district, is the whole district a highly functional professional learning community? I don't believe so, because I think there's some people, it's just like democracy. People will tell you who they're going to vote for, then they're going to turn around and vote for whoever they want in the open door, and it's a little different than the closed door. But I believe Dearborn Public Schools allows their teachers to teach the curriculum that they want within as a collaborative team and looking at the results and see how they can improve. There's not one person dictating what's being taught from the top all the way down. They should trust their frontline people, so to speak, with educating our children.
Thank you. Mr. Yep. Silla?
Well, thank you for this question. Actually, the curriculum is good, but as always, there is a door for improvement. And, you know, when the teachers are teaching such of classes, you know, every time they teach class or they taught class, they come up with more ideas to deliver to students and to make the subject more easier for the students to adopt. So it's a very important that, you know, you follow the curriculum which is provided, but in the same time, once you find a way that the curriculum can be enhanced, there is a way that you can communicate with the administration or with the union or whomever is responsible for this curriculum in order to improve the curriculum. There is always door for improvement. And you know, when we have the curriculum was based in someone who was expert. He built it based in his experience. So when you have someone who have the experience, theoretical and practical, then it will be easier for him to improve and to enhance the curriculum. So, for example, when I worked as a project manager, and I teach project management, I teach the students based in experience. So I teach them based in my practical experience, which make it easier for them to understand practical and theoretical and to understand how they will deal with it in real life. So it's always important that there is, as I said earlier, a door for improvement to the curriculum, but it should be with the, you know, communication and agreement and collaborations between other teachers, other experts, administrations, and students and parents in the same time. Thank you.
Mr. Apigian.
This is the most important thing about the preserving and teaching of democracy philosophically. We do not teach civics anymore in school. So we need a civics program. It's divided in stages. A civics program for kindergartners and first and second, third graders, which consists of songs. And then as you move up, stories, even foolish ones. George Washington cut the cherry tree, whatever silly thing that is. And then you work your way up. Civics never goes away. You don't teach it once in the 11th grade, and that's your requirement. It moves up through elementary school, gets more sophisticated, where you're teaching history of the Civil War or other things, and it goes on to high school until it gets so sophisticated in terms of it's not a course. It's a process through the whole kindergarten through the end. We have people that don't understand anything how the American system works, and they don't vote. As a person that's been in politics and vote, it'll scare you to know what the percentage of young people. The only people that vote historically are older people. And by older people, I mean over 50, over 60. The younger people are not voting. They don't understand the significance of it. We need a civics program that's developed for kindergarten all the way to the 12th grade, and we don't have it. I think we don't. I don't even think we teach civics anymore anywhere. If we do, it's a one course for a high school person. And it's the most, that's why we're having the problems we see today.
Thank you very much.
Well, we really appreciate that you have come and shared your opinions with us. So now you have 2 minutes each to make a closing statement, starting with Mr. Silla.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank you again for having the invitation today, and I would like to thank everyone here today for joining us and having some of your times to come to here. As I said, you know, if I elected, I will strive to make Durban Public School guideway successful students through an education program based on combination of theory and practice. I believe that an effective education is vital in our society, and that once successfully implemented, I will provide a positive learning environment for students, and in turn, this will lead to a society that it is better developed socially, economically, and environmentally. I will always work hard to make sure that everyone in our building is saved, and I will always work hard to provide high-quality, sustainable education for our students and create positive learning environment in all our schools and ensure the safety of our students and staffs in all times. And finally, carefully manage our school's district's finance and taxpayers' money. And this is my aim. And please don't forget to vote and to encourage others for voting. Thank you very much.
Mr. Apigian.
I too thank the League of Women Voters for this opportunity to express our ideas. So why do I deserve your support in this election over the other five candidates is the primary purpose of my presentation in this forum. As you can see from my opening statement, I bring a very unique educational and professional background of a useful analytical thinking process for the possible future planning needs of the school system, composed of 37 existing buildings, not to mention I was also the City of Detroit's school board architect. Two of my most interesting international projects were design of a satellite city for Mecca in Saudi Arabia called Madinat al-Baraka and a refugee center in Iraq, plus a central business district plan for the city of Pontiac, Michigan, and the Cobo Hall alternative design environmental impact study on the city of Detroit. If I can do that, I can be a very useful to the discussions of the Dearborn School Board. In addition, I have also been a professional construction and medical arbitrator. On a personal note, I am a member of the St. Sarkis Armenian Orthodox Church on Ford Road, next to the mosque. In addition, I have been elected to the boards of directors of two adjacent facilities of the Armenian Community Center, the 150-unit HUD building and the Armenian Community Center next to that. In conclusion, which one of us brings the most useful background in our experiences to the deliberations of the school board? In the end, it is not the number of service organizations or do-gooder committees you join, but what you know and how you can be helpful.
And Mr. Durant, you get the last word.
Well, all right. If you guys, first, thank you so much for having me. I didn't come with a prepared speech, because I feel like you just need to come from the heart. I have 5 kids. 4 of them are going to come through the Dearborn Public Schools. I mentioned that. you'll see, like I said, you see me working with children, the Pop Project, the murals in the East End, by the fish market, by Dick Blick, by Alchemo, who's over there. You'll see me with a paintbrush or a roller helping out the youth. You'll see me at homecoming helping out the little kids, the big kids. You'll see me coaching sports. You see me encouraging other people to come to Dearborn Public Schools. If you elected me, I would always use my 23 years of educational experience, one hat, a parent, another hat, and a grandparent, the third hat. What's best for all of our kids? Would I want my own children to experience these things? Would I want my neighbor's children to experience these things? I don't have as much knowledge about building buildings or budgets, but that's okay. I've raised 5 kids, and I didn't know how to do that from the jump. And you kind of figure it out as you go. I would always listen to the people and do what's right for all of our kids in Dearborn. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. On behalf of the League of Women Voters of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and the communities we serve, we want to thank the candidates for participating in this forum. And to the voters out there, please remember to vote. The polls will open on Tuesday, November 8th from 7 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. Absentee ballots are available from the city clerk's office for any reason. Anybody can get them. And thank you all for coming. And thank you, the three of you, for coming. We really appreciate your input.
The League of Women Voters Dearborn Dearborn Heights Candidate Forum for the Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education, which was held on October 11th. We do thank the League of Women Voters Dearborn Dearborn Heights for making this available for us, and we certainly appreciate your attention and listening to that. And of course, Election Day coming up in just a couple of weeks. I'm sure we're going to talk about it in future episodes of the WHFR Journal as well. That is all that we have time for. The entire forum, which goes about another 15 or so minutes from what we heard today, is available on the League of Women Voters Dearborn Dearborn Heights website, which is simply lwvddh.org. Let's see. This is WHFR Dearborn at 89.3 FM, online at WHFR.FM, making waves. Highway 61 coming up next. Blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR, making waves. South of Memphis, Tennessee.